Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Jennifer Weathercentre. She recounts how an almost supernatural feeling compelled her to audition for the role as BFM's weather presenter. She also tells us the strange circumstances that saw her being the only BFM personality to have a song written all about her by people that had never even met her. Welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Jennifer Weathercentre.
Hi.
Now, first off, just for the record, I want to say thank you and show my gratitude for you naming this series.
Yeah, it was suitably pompous and ridiculous was kind of what I wanted. And when I was thinking about it, and I thought it might be a good show, like a good, like, you know, once a week a old person came and did a show or something. And I said, oh, I'm good with names.
Now, let's go back to the start. How did you first get involved in BFM?
I think it's a really good story. I think it's a great story. Have you ever had a situation where you went, oh my God, if I do this, it's going to be amazing? Have you ever done that?
maybe a couple of times in my life.
No,
yeah.
Maybe not amazing isn't the right word. Actually, it's even more than that. It was like a psychic flash. It's the funniest story. BFM wasn't particularly on my radar, and I was living with my boyfriend at the time. Been overseas, and I'd been in London, I'd been in Sydney, and then we moved to Wellington. That was in 1993, end of 92, 93. And we hated Wellington. Sorry, Wellington. Didn't like living in Wellington. Moved back up to Auckland after 6 months, and I was temping, actually, funnily enough, at Fletcher's, Fletcher Challenge. It was fabulous. Oh my God, beautiful New Zealand art all around the walls, and I spent my whole day looking at the New Zealand art, not doing the temping because I wasn't very good at it. I had my boyfriend's car, driving in his car, and he was an advertising creative, and he liked BFM particularly because of the ads and because of the music, and I was kind of like, well, you know, it's all right. I didn't have a big sensibility about BFM. I actually did have a little bit to do with BFM, very indirectly, in that I flattered with Peter McLennan from the Hallelujah Picassos and everything else. And that was in 1990. I'm sure he was obviously involved with BFM then, and I think it was just there really faintly in the distance, on the background, on my radar. But anyway, one morning, listening to The Breakfast Show, Marcus Lush doing the breakfast, Joel Tobick was the Tobick Weather Centre in Ponsonby, which was his flat. And it was, Tobick was going on movie leave.
Yeah.
He was going off to do a short film. It was his first major short film, I think, that he got a part in. He was just starting his acting career, Joel Tobick. So Marcus said, okay, well, I have a competition, and whoever wins the competition can fill in for you for doing the weather for 2 or 3 months. And I had a psychic flash in the car. I can still remember it. And I thought, my God, you know what? If I enter this thing, I'm going to win it. I know I am. I knew that it would be a big thing. It wasn't that it was going to be good. It wasn't going to be that it was popular even. Just that it was going to be like a big part of my life, actually, more than anything. That was a sign. I'm quite good at sign. You know, that's a sign. So And I thought, oh God, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to like make up that I know about the weather. So I did. And I wrote this dumb letter, like it was dumb. I was purposely being stupid and said, you know, I've got a saucer in my backyard and I can see, well, it was true. I had saucers and I could see the flag on what was then the Fay Richwaite building in town from my bedroom. So I thought, oh, well, you know, I can see the weather coming.
That could indicate wind direction.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that's right.
Precisely. So yeah, so I wrote this letter and I thought, I have to deliver it by hand because, this sounds really egotistical.
Impact. No, you wanted impact.
If I go up there and they see me and they know that I'm like a young woman who is kind of a go-getter, they'll go, right, we need this person on BFM. Me not really knowing much about BFM. It also too, because I'd done years and years of like modeling go-sees. I was like a fashion model and all that stuff. And so I kind of knew that you had to like make an impact. So I dressed up, delivered the letter to Ben, the receptionist, who was about as grumpy as Ben ever was. Nothing happened. And then like a couple of days later, Marcus rang me and said, well, do you want to like do it tomorrow? Start doing the weather. And I thought, okay. But by then I'd finished my temp job at Fletcher's and I had a temp job, it was hilarious, at Colenso Advertising. I was the kitchen maid. They had a kitchen maid at Colenso Advertising on College Hill. I didn't really cook anything, if I remember rightly. I just had to like heat things up. So anyway, I thought, my God, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to be ringing this flipping BFM people and doing a weather forecast, and I'm supposed to be cooking stuff. So I thought, oh, well, I'll write it out. I don't even know where I got the first forecast from. I knew what the wind direction was because I'd looked in the morning. I think it was probably from the Herald or from, like, somebody else's radio station. So it was in November. I think it was November or October or November 1993. I found Marcus intimidating. He was kind of scary because he was quite a big drinker. And he'd do his, like, all night going out somewhere. And then he'd be asleep under the desk and you'd kind of come in the morning and there'd be Marcus asleep somewhere. Not all the time, just occasionally. And then he was so great on the radio and it was like, how on earth am I going to live up to that? I think I'll just phone in and do 2 minutes or a minute or whatever and then I can go away and do the rest of my life. So, yeah, no, hardly ever came. Then Joel was ready to come back.
Yes, he after 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, he finished his short film and obviously didn't get another role straight away. And Marcus, of all things, said, okay, well, we're going to like have a listener vote. Who do you want? So poor Joel. I got more votes. Well, I don't know if I did or not. But anyway, I got the job. So I always felt really bad about that. But actually, you know, he's like now a famous actor and look at me. So.
Did you get a book about the weather?
No, not initially. I grew up in the countryside and living outdoors a lot. Like I spend a lot of time outdoors. So I knew completely about sunsets, sunrises, moonsets, moonrises, wind direction, precipitation. I knew all about clouds. I was like really focused on the natural world and I knew all about, I know all the names of the clouds. I don't know where I know them from. I just did. So it wasn't a big stretch. It wasn't like, oh my God, I've suddenly got to learn a whole new language. I knew the language. And it was really just a matter of actually learning how to read and kind of the isobars and a map, weather map. Doing the weather on BFM you didn't really have to know anything more than like a farmer or a surfer or somebody like that. So it wasn't like I was predicting what the system would do next for 3 days. I was just saying what it was going to do in the next half an hour or something. I think the amazingness of me becoming a part of BFM wasn't because I was going to be amazing. It was because it was going to be an amazing time, really, I suppose, and that I was going to get to work with some amazing people. What I thought I'd do is I'd play songs that were particularly resonant for me of the three main beautiful men who were my breakfast hosts. They'll love that. Yeah, each of you, the main three. So, Marcus, this song, he used to play it all the time, and I don't know if it was programmed or not, but it was the song that I remember, particularly the first times from when I was doing the weather, and it's One Dove, White Love.
A song is not what it seems.
Thank you.
Marcus and I used to talk about that afterwards, like several years later, and we'd go, God, remember that song? What was it? What was that song? And I could never remember it. But they're from Scotland. I didn't know that. Interesting. She's still doing music. The woman was just so fabulous that sang that song. Anyway, because I was kind of, I mean, the thing with Marcus was, Marcus always asked lots of questions. So there was always a lot to talk about because Marcus would go blah, 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 and ask a question about. He was also, for some reason, I can't remember the reason, he was interested in the fact that I grew up in Kerikeri. I don't know why, but he was. Part of it was it was related to the bus. Because soon after, very soon after I started BFM, we did the first bus trip. We had a whole discussion one time, I remember, about buses, because one of my bus driver, my school bus driver at one particular stage, was Chris Booth, the sculptor. And Mark has been kind of arty and involved with the art world. He knew Chris Booth, the sculptor, and I remember him being particularly fascinated because Chris Booth and his little beautiful little Dachshund dog used to be our bus drivers. The dog and Chris. I think we probably kind of bonded over the bus thing, over the art thing. And yeah, anyway, can I just quickly talk about, I'd like to talk about the bus, the BFM bus trip. The first bus trip was like kind of the most ridiculous thing you could ever imagine. My little house in Parnell one morning about 7 o'clock or something. This huge double-decker bus, like it really, it was the first year, was like a really old Andy bus driver. Hi. Really old English double-decker London bus. There's the driver, there's Marcus, and his father, Robin, who like had come from Remuera, just like picking me up first. And it was just like, this is so mad. How mad is this? Like 7 o'clock in the morning, there's this English bus outside my house with Marcus and his dad in it. I don't even hardly know them. And there was Rick trying to like get signals to broadcast back to the station. And so we just kind of, we'd blab away and say whatever we thought we were going to say, and hopefully it sounded all right. And do a weather report and drive around. And we'd kind of, it was good. It was really good. We drove around. We went to BFM. We drove around. We'd, you know, BFM kind of strongholds of Ponsonby and Greylin and Freeman's Bay and Don McGlashan and Chris Knox and all these kind of crazy BFM characters. People would follow us in their cars and things. Anyway, buses. So anyway, Graham would have been mid to late 1994. Graham took over doing the breakfast role. And actually, I think we had a really seamless transition. I don't really remember anything other than, oh, okay, Graham's doing breakfast now. And he and I got on fine, I think. I think he was probably relatively kind to me. He's such a smart person. He just is. He's really smart. He's really into music. He's really into anything kind of vaguely cultural. And he's also extremely opinionated, which I like, because I like somebody that sounds like they know what they're talking about, even if they don't. And Graham's really good at that. Not that he doesn't know what he's talking about, but you know what I mean. And he was an expert about so many things. And he was from Whangarei. So we bonded over like the Northland rugby team, the goings. And he was amazing. And I just kept doing my weather, doing the reports. And I don't think anything changed particularly. I think possibly by then I did have a full-time proper job, but that was still, I still worked in the ad industry. At that time, such a lot of people will not have realised how early it was in terms of a sensibility of an alternative viewpoint becoming something that people, particularly in the media and in cultural jobs and industries, and they never had a voice before. There wasn't blogs, there wasn't magazines even that really catered for people like that. I mean, and we really do have to thank Graham and particularly Marcus for making commercially acceptable to businesses and to people who had a commercial sensibility alternative radio. People might slaughter me for saying that it was commercially acceptable, but it was. It was commercially acceptable in that there was a breakfast show, there was a regular host later on, I don't know how much later on, maybe then, room for sponsorship of things. Mm-hmm. There was kind of basically the very beginnings of kind of a model. I was on the wave of that first kind of foray into people in the media, people in advertising, people in companies that wanted to sell stuff, which BFM always hated, but they kind of needed, wanting to be part of it. Also just people who were kind of doing more, I suppose with the rise of computers, people were able to do more interesting work and more interesting stuff. And with the beginning of the rise of kind of that interconnectivity between like mobile phones and, you know, all that stuff, where it wasn't really there before, and God, even to typeset something was like 3 days of work, mm-hmm. you know? And so now it was suddenly like it was different and people really flocked to BFM. They really began to flock to it. And also I think too, it really helped that Marcus had developed a television profile as well. It's kind of a song for Graham, but it's also a song for Marcus. And I don't really remember where the crossover happened, but I suspect it was probably slightly more Graham than Marcus. But it's Red Cross, Jimmy's Fantasy.
Climb the mountain with your fingertips, right hand strumming while the left hand grips. Broken fingers turn to broken dreams. Nobody splits until the heck screams.
How long Graham did the breakfast show for that first stint. The one thing I do remember was he went on holiday and I think probably Mikey filled in and he rang from the Las Vegas Hilton. Can you guess where I'm calling from? The Las Vegas Hilton. And me being, you know, obviously like a pop music aficionado from Radio Northland days, I knew that reference. And it was like, oh my God, I actually kind of get BFM now, finally. Instead of feeling like this nerdy loser from advertising land, it was like, oh yeah, okay, you speak my language, Graham. The thing about Graham was that I kind of took a while to get that sensibility of was that he was a member of the Able Tasmans. And I think when I first met him, he was like the program director guy. And I didn't really know he played in a band. And I think it kind of corresponded with a time in my life where I started to go out to live music more than I had before. I always loved live music and I loved concerts and shows and things, but it was that time when the Flying Nun bands were really getting really popular and they were coming to Auckland. The Abel Tasmans were one of those, and then they were based in Auckland, the Abel Tasmans were. So it was a big thing, was that, oh my God, Graham's actually in that band. Oh my God, Graham's does some of this music. And wow, I thought I would like to play an Abel Tasman song, and mostly because I looked it up on YouTube and the video is so gorgeous, and there's Graham with his little rat's tail down the back of his neck, and he looked so great. Graham, you looked so great playing that piano. I just thought, I've got to play the song for you. So it's called Hold Me? Hold Me One. Hold Me. I think, yeah, I was like, is it called Hold Me? Yes, it's called Hold Me.
Thank you.
I realized, I don't know, sometime along the track that Graham was all about the piano. Well, he was all about all sorts of things, but one of his big loves is the piano. And he always used to play Tori Amos, and it was like, why are you playing Tori Amos all the time? I didn't really understand, because Tori Amos was pretty out there in the 1990s. Like, for people liking Tori Amos, she was kind of like what PJ Harvey was like in those early days. It was really pretty alternative for music, for female music. I used to think, my chair's really squeaking. I didn't used to think that, but I'm thinking that now. hang on. Yeah, so Tori Amos was really big in Graham's breakfast show. I've chosen songs that were breakfast show songs from my point of view that I remembered that the DJs played. So I remember Tori Amos. Don't really remember the Abel Tasman featuring strongly because Graham didn't play it. I remember the Red Cross featuring really strongly, and the crossover between Marcus and Graham. I'm not sure where that fitted in. I remember Marcus loving the One Love, White Dove, whatever it's called song. Back to Tori Amos. So Tori Amos is a pianist, and Graham obviously, I think, liked the piano. I hope that's what it was. I don't know. Maybe he just liked crazy redheaded women who, she's obviously a smart girl too. Do you want to play it?
Never was a cornflake girl. Thought that was a good solution, hanging with the raisin girls. She's gone to the other side, giving us a yo-yo. Things are getting kind of gross, and I go at sleepy time. This is not really this. This is not really happening. You bet your life it is. You bet your life it is. Oh, honey, you bet your life. It's a peel out the watchword. Just peel out the watchword. Got a cheaper feel now, all the sweet tears are gone. Gone to the other side with my hands like a pea. They must have paid her a nice price. She's putting on a string big love. This is not really, this is not really happening.
You bet your life.
Well,
So Graham morphed into Mikey. We're trying to remember how. Graham might have gone overseas on holiday a few times, if I remember rightly, and Mikey filled in for him because Mike was doing the drive show and was really good at it and people loved it. And I have to say that got me listening to BFM more. The drive shows were fantastic. Remember they had really great hosts and I can't even remember who they were other than possibly even Otis and Slave then as well. They were certainly later. It was such a nice thing to listen to because kind of you'd be listening after, I would anyway, after work because I don't think I was allowed to have a radio wherever I worked, or I didn't have a radio anyway, or else I was out so much and kind of running around, I didn't really listen to the radio during the day. So to hit the drive show was nice, and Graham became Mike, and Mikey and I didn't really hit it off. It was funny. I don't know what happened with that. I don't know if Mike felt like he just had to continue doing the things that Graham was doing, and so I kind of had to stay being the weather person. Or what? Or maybe he did like me. Maybe it was one of those things he didn't like me much, but actually he did. I don't. It's kind of like a relationship. So you have this kind of serial monogamy with Marcus Graham, and then, oh, okay, I've wife swapped and husband swapped, and I've got the new guy. And you don't always necessarily work. I didn't really know him. I knew he was in Push Push. And he was kind of like this cool guy, and like he's actually said in his one, he was kind of different than the other people at BFM in that he was unashamedly kind of a commercial big hair rock dude from back in the 80s almost. Well, he was young, but you know what I mean. So he was like, he wasn't kind of gothy, or he wasn't, I don't know, into that music that some of the other people at BFM were really into at the time. So he was a little bit different. And I think he also thought I was kind of ditzy because my whole personality was kind of this slightly ditzy, dumb person. People always used to think I was blonde, which I found extremely offensive because why would you think somebody was blonde, you know, honestly, as if blonde is like a moniker, as if that. You know, but anyway, I think he just kind of thought I must be slightly dumb to say the things that I'd say, or I think he was afraid that I'd be just kind of this dumb, stupid girl or something. I don't know. So he was always a little bit circumspect about me, and for several years, I used to kind of think, oh, do I want to keep doing this? People seem to like me. I've got a sponsor to live up to. I had various sponsors at different times. I had this Fabs. The first sponsor was so fabulous. They gave me this beautiful, like, free stuff. And I'd never been given free stuff before. It was really great. You know, they sold stuff. So it wasn't McDonald's, which everybody seemed to have a freak out about in the 90s. Remember that? Remember the whole McDonald's thing? I had this lovely sponsor. So I kind of thought, well, I'm part of the BFM repertoire now. I can't just kind of go, Mikey, I'm freaking out because I don't think you like me. I'm going to have to leave. And of course, I wasn't going to tell him that. Funny, he took a while to come around to me, and I think I took a while to come around to him. And I also suspect, too, he kind of felt like he had stuff to live up to as well. And maybe he wasn't sure if he was living up to, even though he was, like, majorly. But we did it for so long, the breakfast show together, like me ringing up. And in fact, Mike was probably the person that I felt more comfortable coming in to visit because he wasn't too scary. Also, too, I think then BFM had got quite popular and the breakfast show was quite popular and a lot of artists would come. I remember seeing Beck Runga play Drive for the first time. You remember that? Mm-hmm. On her little acoustic guitar. I'm sure that was breakfast. I remember all sorts of really interesting people coming up and doing interviews. And I used to love coming up and just sitting near people who would play their music or talk about their music and talk about their lives. And that was really nice. So Mike and I, somehow or other, it was kind of like the arranged marriage that took a while but then turned into something kind of good. And I loved doing the breakfast show with Mike. I loved doing it with all of the guys, but I particularly loved doing it with Mike because he's actually a very generous broadcaster and he's very generous as a host. So he was lovely to kind of be part of. And after I got over my initial fears, I suppose, which actually was probably all they were, And maybe he got over thinking I was kind of stupid, which I'm quite good at pretending, I suppose. Or maybe people thought I was just because of the things I said. I don't know. I'm just me. So anyway, we got on like a house on fire. And I love Mike. Absolutely love him still. And I think he's an absolute credit to BFM because he still represents that alternative view. He really does. He's so not a commercial radio DJ. He's far too like a bull in a china shop for that. Mm. He's just like, you know, he goes for things and he isn't afraid to be opinionated. And that's so much harder these days to do that. I really think, though, with Mike, there was kind of, it was funny because Mike's whole sensibility was rock guy, big rock guy. And then he also had that lovely side of him which loved delicate, quiet music. And I think that was one of the real strengths of his breakfast show, was that the variety of music that he was into. And also was really sweet for as a listener that he repeated songs quite often, or his real favourite songs, because they became your real favourite songs too. Well, they became some of mine. And the Brad song just to me completely sums up Mike's breakfast show, was that he played it all the time. He just loved that Brad song from Interiors, that album. And him and his enthusiasm was one of the main reasons that they came to New Zealand, because probably they were selling some albums. And I'd imagine it was on the strength of Mike's breakfast show, quite honestly. And they came and they toured. I wanted to play a song for Mike. And I actually struggled with the early songs because I couldn't really think of anything that really summed up Mike in those early days. I don't know when it would have been, 1996 maybe, 96, 97. Hit Upon in the End, Soundgarden, just, they don't sound that heavy now, but they were kind of like a heavy band, kind of heavy rock guys, and Mike being the singer in the band, Chris Cornell being the singer in the band, and Mike could kind of sing these songs. So I thought I'd play a Soundgarden song.
Doesn't make you cry.
The other thing I really wanted to talk about was the big day out. Because there was a big weight of responsibility on me to get the weather right. And one of the early years was like, oh my God, I got it so wrong. I didn't get it wrong. It was fine. There was a heat convection shower in the afternoon, which happens sometimes. And it happened particularly, I think it happened because of all the people's sweaty bodies at Mount Smart. And so this huge big flipping shower turned up and it became a mud bath. And I got in trouble for that. The other one that I really remember that was memorable was the year that Hugh and I went up in the plane. Hugh, of course, being Hugh, who's just fantastic, knew how to fly a plane. So, and I was thinking about that. I was thinking that was pretty brave of me, considering he only just had his... He couldn't fly at night, and I don't think he could do instruments completely by then. But we took off from Ardmore. It was really great. And he was good. And we flew along, and we flew over the BFM, over the big day out, and waggled our wings at the BFM people. And that was really fun. Did some broadcasts from up there as well. That was one of my more fun big day out moments, was up in the plane with Hugh, and it was really good. I enjoyed that. It was one of those things, like I said, I knew that it was going to work out. I just knew me and BFM were going to work out fine. And that was another one of those moments where things worked out fine. It could have been so bad. You know, imagine if Hugh was a terrible pilot and I freaked out and just like, can you imagine?
Get me out of here.
It would have just been a disaster. Imagine if I'd fainted or something and he would have had to stop flying the plane and give me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation or something. It just would have been just a disaster. I don't know how I came to leave BFM. It's a funny story. I don't know why I thought I wanted to work in television, but I did. So I got this job on television, being Jennifer Weathercentre. There was a youth magazine show called The Drum. That was like the main thing that I did. And there was about two or three other things as well. Actually, the most fun thing I'd ever did on television was to be one of the commentators on the Hero Parade. It was so fun. I love doing that because I love dressing up and I love like spectacles and marching people. And, you know, I think I felt like I'd become a little one-dimensional. Also, the television thing was very pushy into a box. You got pushed into it, not just an audio box. It was also a visual box. Literally, it was hard to have another life. And so I think really I just very tired of being called Jennifer Weathercentre.
Just out of interest, did anyone ever approach you to present the weather on television?
Yeah, they did, actually. I did auditions for it. And actually, I was thinking about that. Somewhere there will be a tape that exists. Probably they wiped it, hopefully, of me in this skin-tight purple dress doing my audition to be the weather. And when I think back about it, the dress was just like so inappropriate. I was never going to get that job. It was a lovely dress. I loved that dress. And also I think I probably talked too fast and I hopped around. I'm a kind of a hoppy person and I just kind of hopped around too much and wouldn't stand in one spot.
Stand
and
still.
I'd be covering Balclutha or something, you know. You wouldn't have been able to see the sunshine decal or whatever it's called. But I was in a Dave Dobbin video, with the Outlook for Thursday video. I think, I don't know if it was the real video or if somebody was making a spoof video. Somebody will remember. I was in about three Greg Johnson videos because Greg Johnson was kind of a BFM fixture. And, you know, they'd go, oh, who's a girl? Who likes dressing up?
Who's a girl?
We're making a video, you know, not Jennifer. So I was in about three of those as well. I think Paul Cassidy directed those. Was he a director? Would he call himself a director? Or he probably just would have kept flying, really.
The song competition.
I was trying to remember why there was a Jennifer song competition. I think it was when I was leaving in probably 1998. Or I was doing something. I don't know. I don't know what I was doing. I was doing something and I don't know if it was Mike or Hugh. We decided to have a competition where write a song and send it in. And it was before MP3s were invented. It was before, you know, people had to put them on cassette or do something and make it onto a CD or play it down the phone or whatever. And it was kind of a big deal. This thing went on for at least two or three months, if I remember rightly. And people had to send in their songs and there was like, oh, the competition was close and I was one of the judges and I don't know who else was. Somebody that obviously knew something about, you know, music more than me. Got to be a judge. So this band called Butt Plug, of course it would be called Butt Plug, you know, won the competition with, I don't even know what they won. I don't know what they won. It certainly wasn't a date with me, and it certainly wasn't anything with me. Maybe they got to, I don't know what they got to do, but they, oh my, I have no remembrance for it. I'm really sorry, Butt Plug. But they put it on, they were releasing a little EP, and they put it on their EP, which was so sweet of them. And I still have that. They never autographed it for me. I don't know why not, but they didn't. And yeah, I've still got this flipping Butt Plug song. Thanks, Butt Plug, for your name. And it was a song about me.
You make me hot, just like the element of my stove. When I hear you on the radio, you make the ice of the rise underneath my clothes. You're the weather girl. I wanna be a weather boy. Together we make sweetie sweet. Are you ready? Jennifer, Weather Center. Jennifer, Weather Center. Say you have a really annoying voice. Well, we hear Butt Plug think that you sound really choice. Did I ever see you just walking down the street? Well, I hope my high pressure system and your warm front do meet. Well, you're the weather girl, and I'm the weather boy. Together we make it sweetie sweet. Here we go. Jennifer, Weather Center. Jennifer, Weather Center. Play my little guitar for you, baby. Here we go. You see what I'm saying? Center. Jennifer Weather Center.
Oh, my name. The yes. name, Jennifer Weather Center. It was like, who on earth would call anybody Jennifer Weather Center? It was, why it happened was because there was Joel, and he was at the Tobik Weather Center because that was his last name. And I was Jennifer from the Parnell Weather Center. And for some reason, maybe it was too long or something. I don't know. It kind of got shortened. I'm going to blame Graham on that one. I think he just couldn't be bothered, you know, It was too long. He's efficient. He liked efficiency. It was his efficiency drive or whatever. Yeah, so I got to do some really fun things to be being Jennifer Weatherstein. It was fun. It was lovely. It was kind of embarrassing at times because it didn't always translate with people, and people did think I was kind of annoying. I was just listening to the lyrics in that butt plug song. You know, people say you've got an annoying voice, but you know, it's my voice. What can I say? Keep taking the crazy people, you know? The crazy young people particularly. Don't get taken in by the fuckers that dress up too smartly. That's not you, Troy.
Jennifer Weathercenter, thank you so much for coming in and telling us some of your stories.
My pleasure.
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a weekly radio documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is available as a podcast later on in the week from BFM's website. The Historical Society is produced at BFM by Dubhead.